Chapter 17. But the world, sir, returned Ebenezer, is so small. Nevertheless, he made a mental note that the notary had once had a client of that name. As I was saying, sir, the death of that dear traveling comrade begins my troubles. What follows? I save myself. I go down to Milan. I am received with coldness by Defresnier and Company. Shortly afterwards, I am discharged by Defresnier and Company. Why? They give no reason why. I ask, do they assail my honor? No answer. I ask, what is the imputation against me? No answer. I ask, where are their proofs against me? No answer. I ask, what am I to think? The reply is, M. Ebenezer is free to think what he will. What M. Ebenezer thinks is of no importance to Defresnier and Company. Apostrophe and that is all. Perfectly. That is all, asserted the notary, taking a large pinch of snuff. But is that enough, sir? That is not enough, said Mater Voigt. The house of Defresnier are my fellow townsmen much respected, much esteemed, but the house of Defresnier must not silently destroy a man's character. You can rebut assertion. But how can you rebut silence? Your sense of justice, my dear patron, answered Ebenezer, states in a word the cruelty of the case. Does it stop there? No. For, what follows upon that? True, my poor boy, said the notary, with a comforting nod or two, your ward rebels upon that. Rebels is too soft a word, retorted Ebenezer. My ward revolts from me with horror. My ward defies me. My ward withdraws herself from my authority, and takes shelter, Madame Dor, with her, in the house of that English lawyer, Mr. Bintrey, who replies to your summons to her to submit herself to my authority, that she will not do so. And who afterwards writes, said the notary, moving his large snuff box, to look among the papers underneath it for the letter that he is coming to confer with me. Indeed? Replied Ebenezer, rather checked. Well, sir, have I no legal rights? Assuredly, my poor boy, returned the notary. All but felons have their legal rights. And who calls me felon? Said Ebenezer, fiercely. No one. Be calm under your wrongs. If the house of Defresnier would call you felon, indeed, we should know how to deal with them. While saying these words, he had handed Bintrey's very short letter to Ebenezer, who now read it, and gave it back. In saying, observed Ebenezer, with recovered composure, that he is coming to confer with you, this English lawyer means that he is coming to deny my authority over my ward. You think so? I am sure of it. I know him. He is obstinate and contentious. You will tell me, my dear sir, whether my authority is unassailable until my ward is of age? Absolutely unassailable. I will enforce it. I will make her submit herself to it. For, said Ebenezer, changing his angry tone to one of grateful submission, I owe it to you, sir, to you, who have so confidingly taken an injured man under your protection and into your employment. Make your mind easy, said Mater Voigt. No more of this now, and no thanks. Be here tomorrow morning, before the other clerk comes between 7 and 8. You will find me in this room, and I will myself initiate you in your work. Go away. Go away. I have letters to write. I won't hear a word more. Dismissed with this generous abruptness, and satisfied with the favorable impression he had left on the old man's mind, Ebenezer was at leisure to revert to the mental note he had made that Mater Voigt once had a client whose name was Vendale. I ought to know England well enough by this time, so his meditations ran, as he sat on a bench in the yard, and it is not a name I ever encountered there, except he looked involuntarily over his shoulder as his name. Is the world so small that I cannot get away from him, even now when he is dead? He confessed at the last that he had betrayed the trust of the dead, and misinherited a fortune. And I was to see to it. And I was to stand off, that my face might remind him of it. Why my face, unless it concerned me? I am sure of his words, for they have been in my ears ever since. Can there be anything bearing on them, in the keeping of this old idiot? Anything to repair my fortunes, and blacken his memory? He dwelt upon my earliest remembrances, that night at Basel. Why, unless he had a purpose in it? Mater Voigt's two largest he-goats were butting at him to butt him out of the place, as if for that disrespectful mention of their master. So he got up and left the place. But he walked alone for a long time on the border of the lake, with his head drooped in deep thought. Between 7 and 8 next morning, he presented himself again at the office. He found the notary ready for him, at work on some papers which had come in on the previous evening. In a few clear words, Mater Voigt explained the routine of the office, and the duties a Benreiser would be expected to perform. It still wanted 8:05 when the preliminary instructions were declared to be complete. I will show you over the house and the offices, said Mater Voigt, but I must put away these papers first. They come from the municipal authorities, and they must be taken special care of. Benreiser saw his chance, here, of finding out the repository in which his employer's private papers were kept. Can't I save you the trouble, sir? He asked. Can't I put those documents away under your directions? Mater Voigt laughed softly to himself, closed the portfolio in which the papers had been sent to him, handed it to Benreiser. Suppose you try, he said. All my papers of importance are kept yonder. He pointed to a heavy oaken door, thickly studded with nails, at the lower end of the room. Approaching the door, with the portfolio, Benreiser discovered, to his astonishment, that there were no means, whatever, of opening it from the outside. There was no handle, no bolt, no key, and, climax of passive obstruction, no keyhole. There is a second door to this room? Said Benreiser, appealing to the notary. No, said Mater Voigt. Guess again. There is a window? Nothing of the sort. The window has been bricked up. The only way in is the way by that door. Do you give it up? Cried Mater Voigt, in high triumph. Listen, my good fellow, and tell me, if you hear nothing inside? Benreiser listened for a moment, and started back from the door. I know, he exclaimed. I heard of this when I was apprenticed here at the watchmaker's. Pair and brothers have finished their famous clock lock at last, and you have got it? Bravo, said Mater Voigt. The clock lock it is. There, my son. There you have one more of what the good people of this town call Daddy Voigt's follies. Apostrophe with all my heart. Let those laugh who win. No thief can steal my keys. No burglar can pick my lock. No power on earth, short of a battering ram or a barrel of gunpowder, can move that door, till my little sentinel inside, my worthy friend who goes tick, tick, apostrophe as I tell him, says, open. Apostrophe the big door obeys the little tick, tick, and the little tick, tick, obeys me. That, cried Daddy Voigt, snapping his fingers, for all the thieves in Christendom. May I see it in action? Asked Benreiser. Pardon my curiosity, dear sir. You know that I was once a tolerable worker in the clock trade. Certainly you shall see it in action, said Mater Voigt. What is the time now? 7:58. Watch, and in 1 minute you will see the door open of itself. In 1 minute, smoothly and slowly and silently, as if invisible hands had set it free, the heavy door opened inward, and disclosed a dark chamber beyond. On 3 sides, shelves filled the walls, from floor to ceiling. Arranged on the shelves, were rows upon rows of boxes made in the pretty inlaid woodwork of Switzerland, and bearing inscribed on their fronts, for the most part in fanciful colored letters, the names of the notary's clients. Mater Voigt lighted a taper, and led the way into the room. You shall see the clock, he said proudly. I possess the greatest curiosity in Europe. It is only a privileged few whose eyes can look at it. I give the privilege to your good father's son. You shall be one of the favored few who enter the room with me. See, here it is, on the right-hand wall at the side of the door. An ordinary clock, exclaimed Benreiser. No, not an ordinary clock. It has only one hand. Aha, said Mater Voigt. Not an ordinary clock, my friend. No, no. That one hand goes round the dial. As I put it, so it regulates the hour at which the door shall open. See, the hand points to 8. At 8 the door opened, as you saw for yourself. Does it open more than once in the 4 and 20 hours? Asked Abenreezer. More than once? Repeated the notary, with great scorn. You don't know my good friend. Tick tick. He will open the door as often as I ask him. All he wants is his directions, and he gets them here. Look below the dial. Here is a half circle of steel let into the wall, and here is a hand, called the regulator, that travels round it, just as my hand chooses. Notice, if you please, that there are figures, to guide me on the half circle of steel. Figure 1. Means. Open once in the 4 and 20 hours. Figure 2. Means. Open twice, and so on to the end. I set the regulator every morning, after I have read my letters, and when I know what my day's work is to be. Would you like to see me set it now? What is today? Wednesday. Good. This is the day of our rifle club. There is little business to do. I grant a half holiday. No work here today, after 3 o'clock. Let us first put away this portfolio of municipal papers. There. No need to trouble tick tick, to open the door until 8 tomorrow. Good. I leave the dial hand at 8. I put back the regulator to 1. Semicolon I close the door, and closed the door remains, past all opening by anybody, till tomorrow morning at 8. Abenreezer's quickness instantly saw the means by which he might make the clock lock betray its master's confidence, and place its master's papers at his disposal. Stop, sir, he cried, at the moment when the notary was closing the door. Don't I see something moving among the boxes on the floor there? Mater Voigt turned his back for a moment to look. In that moment, Abenreezer's ready hand put the regulator on, from the figure I, to the figure 2. Unless the notary looked again at the half circle of steel, the door would open at 8 that evening, as well as at 8 next morning, and nobody but Abenreezer would know it. There is nothing, said Mater Voigt. Your troubles have shaken your nerves, my son. Some shadow thrown by my taper, or some poor little beetle, who lives among the old lawyer's secrets, running away from the light. Hark! I hear your fellow clerk in the office. To work. To work. And build today the first step that leads to your new fortunes. He good-humoredly pushed Abenreezer out before him. Extinguished the taper, with a last fond glance at his clock which passed harmlessly over the regulator beneath, and closed the oaken door. At 3, the office was shut up. The notary and everybody in the notary's employment, with one exception, went to see the rifle shooting. Abenreezer had pleaded that he was not in spirits for a public festival. Nobody knew what had become of him. It was believed that he had slipped away for a solitary walk. The house and offices had been closed but a few minutes, when the door of a shining wardrobe in the notary's shining room opened, and Abenreezer stopped out. He walked to a window, unclosed the shutters, satisfied himself that he could escape unseen by way of the garden, turned back into the room, and took his place in the notary's easy chair. He was locked up in the house, and there were 5 hours, to wait before 8 o'clock came. He wore his way through the 5 hours, sometimes reading the books and newspapers that lay on the table, sometimes thinking, sometimes walking to and fro. Sunset came on. He closed the window shutters before he kindled a light. The candle lighted, and the time drawing nearer and nearer, he sat, watch in hand, with his eyes on the oaken door. At 8, smoothly and softly and silently the door opened. One after another, he read the names on the outer rows of boxes. No such name as Vendale. He removed the outer row, and looked at the row behind. These were older boxes, and shabbier boxes. The 4 first that he examined, were inscribed with French and German names. The fifth bore a name which was almost illegible. He brought it out into the room, and examined it closely. There, covered thickly with time stains and dust, was the name. Vendale. The key hung to the box by a string. He unlocked the box, took out four loose papers that were in it, spread them open on the table, and began to read them. He had not so occupied a minute, when his face fell from its expression of eagerness and avidity, to one of haggard astonishment and disappointment. But, after a little consideration, he copied the papers. He then replaced the papers, replaced the box, closed the door, extinguished the candle, and stole away. As his murderous and thievish footfall passed out of the garden, the steps of the notary and someone accompanying him stopped at the front door of the house. The lamps were lighted in the little street, and the notary had his door key in his hand. "Pray do not pass my house, Mr. Bintrey," he said. "Do me the honor to come in. It is one of our town half-holidays, Arthur, but my people will be back directly. It is droll that you should ask your way to the hotel of me. Let us eat and drink before you go there." "Thank you, not tonight," said Bintrey. "Shall I come to you at 10 tomorrow?" "I shall be enchanted, sir, to take so early an opportunity of..." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.